Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The news flow continues to arrive at a frenetic pace, and there's no let-up this week as investors await news on tariff implementation, more Doge activity, latest developments on a ceasefire in Ukraine. I know we have a big jobs report coming out later this week as well. So joining us for the conversation today, once again here in studio, glad to welcome back on this Monday morning, Jason Trejo, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, nice to be back with you today here in studio. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to be here. It's almost as cold in the studio as it outside in New York City this morning.
Winter's not letting up.
Well, it's March, so we're almost over.
Exactly. So, Jason, it is a big week ahead of us. I know you put out a blog recently. Title is What We Know. Within, you said there are things that we know with relative confidence, one of those things being what the market is pricing. So what exactly is the market pricing at the moment?
Bottom line, I'd say the market's been pricing a growth scare in the U.S. economy. You can see that from a variety of different asset classes. The S&P 500 is down 3% from its all-time high on February 19th. A little bit more, if it was over 4%, after the bounce on Friday. But if you look underneath the surface, defensive stocks have been outperforming cyclicals, depending on how you measure like these different categories, but anywhere from like 5 to 10 percentage points just over the past week or so. So significant kind of rotation there. Yields are down quite a bit. So the 10-year treasury yield is down 30 basis points in February. And real rates account for the bulk of that. Like they're, 27 of the 30 basis points decline roughly. So roughly 90%. When that happens, it's the market sort of, expecting in pricing more Fed cuts. It's now up to about 70 basis points of cuts this year, reflecting kind of, growth concerns. The U.S. dollar is kind of lower. So really in some way, like the past, few weeks and year to date, the U.S. exceptionalism story for last year on the growth front in particular, mm-hmm. that's, been challenged. You've seen it elsewhere, like Eurozone equities, China equities are up 10% plus year to date. So I'd say it's more of the U.S. sort of catching down and the rest of the world kind of catching up. But as a result, it is leading to sort of this rotation. That's where the markets are pricing right now as a bit of a growth scare.
Picking up on the growth scare concerns, what do we actually know about growth? Is this just a scare or perhaps something else?
Well, these concerns have been sort of picking up a little bit throughout February when we started to get some of the January data. It's falling a little bit below expectations, primarily on the sentiment front. We see sentiment both for consumers, businesses pulling back after, in some cases, they surged post-election. So they've been pulling back there. What sort of further catalyzed these growth concerns, were some retail sales for January, a couple weeks ago that were disappointing. Mm-hmm. But then on Friday, we got, personal consumption expenditure data, which is broader than retail sales. It includes services. It's more all-encompassing. And that disappointed. The expectation was that it'd be slightly negative on a month-to-month basis, minus 0.1%. It came in at minus 0.5%. So further fueling the concerns that, maybe the consumer's cracking, the uncertainties weighing on the consumer. So that didn't help. And also on Friday, we got a trade data that saw a massive surge of imports into the U.S. So the trade deficit on a month-to-month basis or monthly basis, consensus was going to be around about $115 billion deficit, and came in over $150 billion. All these things kind of go into the GDP calculation, or at least expected GDP for Q1. The Atlanta Fed has a Wiley Fall GDP now kind of, tracking estimate. It dropped from 2.3% for Q1 before Friday to minus 1.5% on Friday. Now, this is greatly exaggerated by the trade data because the way it works is that essentially if the U.S. economy is strong and imports more and it's exporting the same amount, that actually is a net drag on imports, on the GDP growth. The trade deficit increased likely because of front-running of tariffs. So as companies anticipate tariffs, they want to brain stuff in that's not going to be hit with that tariff rate. There's also a lot of evidence that a big chunk of those surge in imports were gold. And so that's also a factor perhaps, why gold's been doing well. Mm-hmm. So it's less a reflective of the economy and then, but it's reflective of the policy and that's having a consequence for activity in the GDP data. On the consumption side, the one that would be more fundamentally concerning, it just also needs to be put in context. Real consumption surged 4.5% on an annualized basis in the second half of last year. A lot of that was in the fourth quarter leading up to the holidays. So the consumer was spending very strongly towards the end of last year. So it's not surprising to see a bit of a pullback in January. There's also some kind of seasonal disruptions trying to, like, you know, adjust the seasonality, given there's such a surge in December, then a fall off in January. That's always a little bit tricky, so you have to take January data with a grain of salt. The weather was cold across much of the country, certainly in the Northeast. We know it was quite cold. I think that impacted spending, especially when you look at categories that might be more leisure activity related, whether it's travel, outdoor activities, things like that. So I think that the key thing is the consumer has been spending well. 1 month shouldn't change that narrative. Personal income actually exceeded expectations in terms of how much it grew in January. As long as real income grows around 2% this year, which is a reasonable estimate, consumption growth should be solid. That's the pillar of the economy. That supports the labor market. It becomes a virtuous cycle. So all this is to say that what we have right now is probably a bit of a growth soft patch, not a fundamental deterioration in the growth outlook. Maybe have to, you know, reduce a little bit of our expectations for growth overall this year, but it's still likely to be around, you know, 2%. In terms of the near term for the market narrative, this growth scare concerns, a lot of it could be alleviated or exacerbated by the payrolls report for February that we get on Friday. If it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 to 150,000 to 175,000, around kind of where consensus is, that'll be fine. If it's 200 plus, that'll alleviate the concerns. If it's sub 100,000, a little bit like last summer when we got a weak July jobs print and the market sold off a lot, that will certainly cause some consternation. So that's probably the biggest data point that we have to watch this week is the payrolls report.
So, Jason, as investors have been digesting these economic data components in terms of what we know, you mentioned the jobs report in a few days, that will be something investors will be paying close attention to. How have investors been responding? How have they been positioning?
Well, I'd say investor sentiment is deteriorated quite rapidly, whereas investor positioning has gone from sort of risk on to more of a neutral positioning overall. So just a couple of data points to illustrate this. The AAII U.S. Investor Sentiment Survey has bullish, bearish readings. The latest bearish, and it comes out weekly, it was the highest since October of 2022. So right when the people were worried about stagflation, a recession. In the past, frankly, 30 years, you know, at least since 2000, the only other times when the bearish readings were higher was in the depths of the great financial crisis back in 2008, 2009. So putting that perspective, doesn't seem like it's that bad overall, but clearly just to give an indication of how much sentiment has deteriorated. Another example of this is we've seen, you know, pretty sharp pullbacks in, you know, crypto you know, prices. Some of the more retail favorite meme stocks have been pulling back quite a bit. So again, the retail investor has been, you know, suddenly kind of, you know, lost a little bit of faith in the economy. We saw that in sort of, you know, flow data from a different investment banks that would, you know, all pointed to retail investors selling last week. Now, for perspective, they were aggressive buyers for the first 6 weeks of this year, a bit of a tailwind for the markets going higher. But clearly, there's been a pivot in terms of what retail investors are thinking. Institutional investors, I'd also say, have, you know, de-risked. You know, hedge funds have been de-risking, especially in the tech space. You know, perhaps some asset allocator, long-only types have been also kind of de-risking. But again, the perspective is that a lot of investors came into 2025 in sort of risk-on positioning, consistent with the Trump trade, expecting equities to go higher. So this latest adjustment, I'd say, is kind of gets us back to where we were around the election. And then on a net, I think position, I'd say, is kind of cleaner. And last week or the week before, it didn't look like investors were buying the dip. Now that position is cleaner, valuations and levels are a little bit lower, you could start to see investors kind of, you know, coming in to buy the dip. But that's definitely been a notable change in terms of sentiment worse, position cleaner.
So, Jason, one item that you wrote within the blog is that we don't really know and can only conjecture on is the Trump put. So what is your conjecture about the put right now?
So we talked about three things that I think we have a pretty good sense of, you know, what's going on. The policy is the harder one to predict, right? And we're maybe 24 hours away from tariffs being imposed on Canada and Mexico. Right. It could be like last time where they were sort of delayed at the last minute.
That deadline came up quick.
That deadline, before you know it, these things happen, right? So it's kind of a question like, what is the policy outlook? Mm-hmm. And given the jitters in the marketplace about kind of growth concerns, you know, some investors are asking, like, where is a Trump put? Does he want to see the market, you know, kind of step into pivot policy in a way that would be more supportive for equities? And we know that because during this first administration, he was heavily focused on the stock market. It's been sort of well documented. He uses that as a gauge of success for his economic policies. Well, if you take where the markets closed on Friday, the S&P was at 59.54. That's a little bit below its level on the inauguration day. If you think, well, that's when Trump would sort of, you know, use that as a starting point, when it was 59.96, so about, you know, 40 points below. but it's still higher than it was on election day, which was 57.82. So it depends on like where you think the strike price is. I think there's the reality is probably they're comfortable with where it is. It's not sold off enough to suggest, as policymakers, they need to do something different because the markets are sending the signal you're making a mistake. And that's how I would sort of interpret the equity markets. But something that we've talked about before, and I wrote about a blog on this last November suggesting there's the other Trump put. Mm-hmm. And the other Trump put is for treasuries. Now, the context for this election versus last election is that everyone thought there'd be a replay of some of the policies, cutting taxes, deregulation, you'd reflate the economy. That made sense in 2016 when inflation and rates were much lower.
Sure.
You could sort of lift them higher. That'd be a positive for the economy overall. This time, inflation and rates are much higher. So really don't want to have reflationary policies that push inflation and interest rates even higher at a time when the 10-year was getting close to 5%. You presumably want sort of disinflationary growth, which means in some sense, if the treasury yield goes higher, it's a signal that you're making the wrong policy choices. So there'd be a Trump put for treasuries. And that was the conjecture. A month into Trump 2.0, I'd say that's is it's kind of being borne out. But in some ways, that's for a little bit of surprising reasons. One, the 10-year treasury yield was 4.6% roughly when he took office. It seems still that was below what a strike price would be, but the policies thus far suggest that the treasury put was already in the money. They're trying to exercise it and get yields to go lower. Elon Musk has reportedly been using the 10-year treasury yield as it's fallen as a sign that the Doge-related spending cuts are good, or have been viewed by the market as, reducing the deficit, reducing spending, bringing down inflation sort of as a positive. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has, been in interviews stating that they think the policies are going to be disinflationary. Mm-hmm. If you slow growth, they will be, but it's also they want inflation to go lower. They think ultimately lower interest rates as a result will be beneficial for kind of growth later on. Maybe most significant is that Trump himself has actually tweeted very little about the stock market performance this time. Instead, he's been tweeting more about things like the debt ceiling, government spending, tariffs, things that would be sort of negative for growth. I would say, and I think a lot of investors would view the fact that if you're emphasizing significant cuts to government spending right now, implementing significant tariffs without kind of offsetting growth positive policy measures, that you'd be making a policy error. But I think we have to kind of maybe think that perhaps this administration has taken it that they need to have pain now to get gains later, that they're willing to tolerate a bit of a slowdown in growth, the stock markets to go lower to make the bigger structural changes that they want. And of course, the tax policy deregulation changes, that takes much more time than executive orders on tariffs. So if that's the case, it just means that don't expect the Trump sort of put to kick in right away. There could be more pain before ultimately they realize they're on a path of making a mistake.
Interesting. And Jason, if we close out on asset allocation, good timing that you're joining us today. I know the House view was updated last week by the Chief Investment Office. What are the main investment messages, takeaways for investors at the moment?
I'll start with making a few main points. First is that U.S. risk assets, for them to resume their strong performance and relative outperformance, I think you need to see investors becoming confident that the kind of this growth soft patch is only temporary. So looking for signs of positive inflection and sort of economic surprise indices or GDP tracking estimates, the one I alluded to earlier, starting to inflect more positively. I think that would be a good starting point to get investors more comfortable that growth actually will be fine. A second thing is that these inflections probably won't happen in the very near term, especially if tariffs are implemented, this week. And there's a very good chance the government shuts down on March 14th, unless there's some sort of deal. I think the administration wouldn't be overly opposed to that. Meanwhile, growth enhancing policies on taxes, things like that could take, much later, this year to kind of come into play. So that's, some near term could be choppy. Kind of related to that is sort of a third point that, we often say, don't fight the Fed for investors. You probably don't want to fight, Trump policies at this point in time, given that the Fed is also somewhat beholden to what the administration does. And so if they're focused on bringing down inflation, bringing down rates, that's not necessarily great for growth. Ultimately, they want to be presumably still growth positive, but that's, maybe sequencing is an important thing to consider as you're making allocation decisions. And the fourth kind of observation or point is that, the markets have repriced kind of these growth expectations across markets. I think this is a healthy reset, and the same thing kind of applies to positioning. Well, I think in the very near term, like the next month, the risks are probably skewed to the downside from a macro perspective, given some of the policy choices. Investors are more likely to kind of buy those dips. So you add this all up, given our house view updates, you know, there was no major changes in our asset class, you know, preferences, you know, no major changes in the overall kind of key messages. We still think there's more to go in equities. Again, this is a 6 to 12 month view kind of for the rest of the year. Ultimately, we think the macro will be supportive. You know, policy will pivot from being maybe growth concerns to growth, you know, reinforcing, and all that. Earnings still outlook still based on Q4 earnings season still looks positive in terms of around 8% earnings growth this year. All of which suggests there's more upside for U.S. equities this year to 6,600 by year end. Another message: seize the AI opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's been challenged this year. Like the Mag 7 are down about 6% year to date. Meta is the only stock of the seven that's actually up. So it's really been a contrast where other markets, other regions are outperforming. Even other parts of the U.S. equity markets have been outperforming. Good chance that this Mag 7 stocks have been hit with this downdraft about growth concerns, about positioning. They were kind of a consensus trade. So some of the rotation could sort of be impacting their performance. The earnings numbers they've reported, their guidance on CapEx spending still suggests the AI thesis is very much in play. Mm-hmm. You know, once the dust settles on some of the policy, that will kind of come true. And if there is downside risk, I think one investors will still gravitate towards the stocks that, you know, are a little bit more immune to the macro story because it's more of a secular micro level theme. So we still like that. We did change one message from locking your yields to seek durable income. Yields, you know, we think are going to bounce around where they are. An environment's going to be choppy. Kind of thinking about buying quality fixed income, buying, you know, more of the shorter intermediate parts of rates. And the final thing is, you know, navigate these political risks, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, some things I've talked about, but, you know, gold is a bit of a hedge. And certainly if you're willing to use structured solutions or derivatives, you know, you can buy, you know, option protection for your portfolio for those that are inclined to do so.
So overall, when it comes to allocation, it sounds like, Jason, CIO is maintaining the course at the moment.
By and large, yes. Kind of riding through some volatility in the marketplace that will probably persist. But ultimately, we don't think what's happened thus far really alters the fundamental story that we had coming into this year.
Right. Well, Jason, very helpful touch base as we begin another trading week. Thank you for joining us to provide some perspective on these many headlines impacting the markets. And we'll continue to keep in touch. And thank you as well for keeping us current on CIO's thinking when it comes to positioning. Great speaking with you, Jason, as always.
You're welcome. Have a great week and stay warm.
Likewise. Thank you, Jason. Again, today we have been joined by Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I quickly want to point everyone, our listeners, to the latest UBS House View publication suite, including the latest CIO messages in focus, can now be located up on ubs.com/House View. You also have Jason's latest blog, which we have been making reference to this morning. A title is What We Know, available up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive direct copies of these resources. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.